We're doing Tanya 200, going through the Hasidic classic, the work of the Tanya, celebrating the 200th anniversary of its first printing. We're up to chapter 10 in our review, but let's go over some of the concepts we've already covered. The Tanya tells us that we have two souls, a human soul and a godly soul. In the human soul, there are two kinds. There's the kind that has a natural inborn goodness, which it needs to elevate to godliness. And there's also the soul that has no natural inborn goodness and must acquire goodness and godliness through its deeds. Then there's the godly soul, which is a little piece of God from above that is breathed into the body. And God breathed a soul into the body, as it says in Genesis. And this godly soul is what makes the Jew Jewish and reflects the divine attributes, the 10 attributes with which God creates the world. The godly soul has those same 10 attributes, 3 intellectual functions and 7 emotions. The 3 intellectual functions, the Chochmah, Bina, and the Das, create the emotions in the godly soul. In the human soul, there is intellect and emotion, but the relationship between them is somewhat different. The emotion is primary, and the intellect guides the emotion, but does not give birth or create the emotion. Now, in godliness, the definition that the Tanya gives us, godly means that which is transparent to godliness. Those things in creation that don't block or hide or conceal its creator, but rather allow the creator to be visible, to be evident. Those things that are opaque, those things that draw attention to themselves rather than to their creator, those things are called unholy or non-holy. The things that are completely opaque, the things that show absolutely no sign of a creator and draw attention exclusively to themselves or to itself, those things are called completely dark, completely unholy. Those things that are somewhat translucent, they don't disappear, they're not completely transparent, but they also don't deny utterly the existence of a creator. Those things are called neutral. These are the permissible things. It's not a mitzvah, it's not a positive commandment to do it, or to eat it, or to use it. It's also not a sin, so it's not prohibited. So that's called the permissible, kind of the neutral, the gray area. It is not godly because it doesn't reveal its creator. It's not completely forbidden because it doesn't utterly deny its creator. And in this area, the quality, the condition, is determined more by how we use it than by its natural state. So that, for example, a dollar bill, if it's honestly attained, there's no sin involved, it's just a neutral dollar bill, it does not reveal its creator, even if it does say in God we trust on it, but it doesn't reveal its creator. It's not holy in any way, but it also is not unredeemably unholy. So if you give the dollar bill to charity, it becomes holy. It's available to holiness if it's used in a holy fashion. But something that is prohibited, for example, for a Jew to eat non-kosher meat and to do it in a holy fashion, to celebrate a festival, to celebrate a holiday by eating non-kosher meat, the meat being unkosher cannot be marshaled or can't be drafted into the service of godliness. It remains ungodly no matter how we use it. And that's why it's prohibited. But if it were a kosher piece of meat, this would be a neutral territory. Kosher doesn't mean that it's holy. It doesn't mean that it's sacred. It doesn't mean that it's a mitzvah. There's no positive commandment to eat everything kosher. The commandment is not to eat what isn't kosher. But when you do eat something kosher, it's how you eat it that determines the holiness or unholiness of the food. If it's eaten with a heavenly intention, if it has some holy purpose to use the strength of the energy that we get from the food to serve God properly, or if it is used to celebrate a holiday, then the food itself becomes holy, like the mitzvah that we're going to do with the energy derived from the food. If a person eats kosher food, but he eats it gluttonously and without any holy intention or purpose, without any uplifting value, then it is dragged down into unholy because it becomes a corrupting influence. So there is the neutral and there is the forbidden, which are both unholy but to different degrees. And then, of course, there is the holy, that which is sacred, the commandments, the positive things. Now, the soul, even the human soul, that is translucent, the one that has a little native goodness to it and needs to acquire godliness, thrives on those things in the world that are also translucent. For example, kosher food rather than the non-kosher. So for a soul that is translucent, to eat that which is forbidden is incompatible, because that which is forbidden comes from the completely unredeemable, unholy, and that which is translucent is compatible with a soul that is also translucent. Now, all of this is meant to serve as an introduction to how we're supposed to serve God when we have two souls. One soul that draws us towards holy and godly things, and another soul that draws us to selfish, human, natural things. Not necessarily sinful, but at times including the sinful. So how do we handle this struggle? How do we manage in this battle between the holy and the non, between the godly and the human? The person who has this struggle is described in the Talmud as the Beinoni. And the Tanya is written expressly for the Beinoni. So this is all an introduction for the Beinoni to understand where the struggle is and what the struggle is about before we get to how to fight the battle, how to go about the struggle. So now we know that there are two souls. We know what they want, what they desire. We know how they work. They have 10 faculties. They also have 3 garments, thought, speech, and deed. And here the Tanya tells us that the Beinoni is perfect in his thought, speech, and deed. He will always do what is right, he will always say what is right, and he will always think what is right. He will refuse to think what is forbidden, he will refuse to say what is forbidden, and he will refuse to do what is forbidden. So in all 3 garments of his soul, he behaves properly. But in the emotions of the soul, which are sometimes called the essence of the soul, the emotions, the Beinoni cannot control, and he can't change. He has natural emotions. He feels the attraction to what is unholy, does not do it. He sees the pleasure in it, but doesn't want it. And so he refuses, and he does what is right. There are also saintly people who even in their emotions are holy and don't have this kind of struggle, because the unholy has no appeal to them. It doesn't attract them at all, and so there is no temptation for the unholy. These are the saintly, the tzaddikim. In this struggle between the godly and the natural soul, there is a battle in the Beinoni over the body and its function. In other words, the area, the battlefield, is not in the emotions, but in the actions, in the speech, and in the thoughts. In other words, in behavior. The godly soul wants godly behavior, which means godly thoughts, godly speech, godly actions. The natural soul wants natural behavior, which means natural thoughts, natural speech, and natural deeds that are pleasurable. The human soul is not terribly particular as to whether these thoughts, speech, and deed, which are pleasurable, are also permissible or non-permissible. We're not talking about the evil inclination here that takes pleasure only in the forbidden. We're talking about the soul that is natural, that is called the animal soul, and like an animal, it does what comes natural, what feels good, what tastes good, indiscriminately. Not necessarily what is forbidden, but again, not necessarily refusing what is forbidden. So it's a neutral kind of a pursuit of pleasure, which is human, and wants the comfort and the pleasures that are natural to it, that are easily available, which are, of course, physical pleasures. And so this is where the battle rages. In chapter 10, the Rebbe describes for the Beinoni the condition of a tzaddik, for the purpose of contrast, so that we know more clearly what a Beinoni is. Let's take a look at what a tzaddik is. Between the two souls, the godly and the human, there is conflict, there's an incompatibility. In the tzaddik, the human soul is elevated and is transformed until it becomes godly, until it becomes holy. In the tzaddik, in the truly saintly person, all his human instincts have become divine, and so he despises evil. He has no pleasure, no attraction for anything unholy, for anything ungodly, not even the permissible for its own sake. This is a saintly person. But among saintly people, there are two kinds. There is the imperfect saint, and there is the perfect saint. The complete tzaddik and the incomplete tzaddik. The difference between them is that in the incomplete tzaddik, the rejection and the despising of evil is not utter. It's not complete. And the reason for that is because the love for God is not absolute. The imperfect tzaddik loves God to such a degree that all unholy impulses, not behavior, more than behavior, every impulse, every attraction, every emotion has become exclusively godly, and even the basic human emotions have become holy, and there is no desire whatsoever for anything ungodly. So the love for God cancels, neutralizes, silences every other kind of love, so that the imperfect tzaddik feels, experiences in his heart of hearts, only one emotion, not dual emotions. Only one emotion, a love and a fear and a compassion only of God, of godly things, of holy things. All human emotion is silenced and nullified in the presence of this love for God. Why then is he an imperfect tzaddik? Not that this is our concern, not that we have any ambitions of becoming saintly, but it helps to know, and as we'll see, it's very enlightening to have a glimpse into the nature of a saint. What is an imperfect saint? So the Tanya says, if the love for God was absolute, not just intense and great, but absolute, then all the human instincts would have been transformed into a desire for godliness. In the imperfect tzaddik, his love for God is so strong, so intense, so powerful, that it completely silences, it neutralizes all other desire, all other love. But the human instincts are silenced rather than transformed into godly. They're neutralized. There is no experience of anything, any emotion, any impulse, any instinct that isn't godly. The imperfect tzaddik has no such experience. But it has not been transformed into positive godliness. Which would mean that there's a little bit of pleasure left in the human arena in the imperfect tzaddik, but he doesn't feel it. He'll never experience it because it is so silenced. But to understand this properly, what does it mean that it's silenced? What does it mean that it's still a little bit there? He's an imperfect tzaddik, but he never experiences anything unholy or even human. There is love and there is pleasure. They're very different. Love has a goal. Love wants something. Love reaches, trying to achieve that which it loves, or to get closer to that which it loves. Pleasure exists only when it is close, when it has what gives it pleasure. So you can have love from a distance, but you can't have pleasure from a distance. So they're very different experiences. Pleasure is higher in the soul than love. Pleasure precedes all other activities of the soul. Without pleasure, there'd be no intellect. Without intellect, there'd be no emotions. There would be no love. Without pleasure, a person wouldn't survive at all. Wouldn't get up in the morning. So pleasure and love are two very different things. Now when it comes to love, what to love, what you're going to love, whether good things or bad things, holy things or unholy things, godly or human, this is a pretty understandable, kind of a natural battlefield. Because the nature of love is that it's fickle, that it can be attracted to almost anything. You can fall in love with all sorts of people, all sorts of things. So it makes perfect sense that there would be a freedom of choice in what you're going to love, who you're going to love, and so on. But when it comes to pleasure, it would seem that we don't have much of a choice here. What is pleasurable is not a matter of option. It is what it is. Can there be a struggle? Is there a struggle in what pleasure we should experience? What should give us pleasure? What should be pleasurable to us? It would seem that that's a fixed, objective reality. Certain things are pleasurable. They may not be yours, and therefore you can't help yourself to it, but it's what gives you pleasure. And you can't argue with that. What he's saying about the saint, about the real tzaddik, is that there is a pleasure that the godly soul feels. Besides love, there's pleasure in godliness. And then there's the pleasure that the natural soul feels. Again, aside from the love of the natural soul, there's also its pleasure. In fact, the natural soul is primarily pleasure. Now, what is going to be the pleasure in life for the tzaddik? Is it going to be the godly or is it going to be the ungodly? The tzaddik can love God so intensely that he feels no other love, no other attraction, no other pull. However, there is still pleasure in the human activity. There is still pleasure in the natural world that the imperfect saint is not drawn to, does not want it, is not interested in it, and that's what's called despising. He despises what is unholy. Despising meaning he feels no attraction to it at all. He barely notices its existence. So that the love that he has for the godly has silenced all love, all attraction for the human. But it hasn't affected the pleasure. The pleasure of the natural soul hasn't changed. To the natural soul, human pleasure is still pleasurable. Only he's not interested, because his love takes him elsewhere. So you can love someone, and this is applying the idea to human relations. You can love someone so intensely that you feel no interest in anybody else. The love is exclusive. It fills the heart so completely that there is no room for any other love. But we don't yet know where the pleasure lies. So a person can be the love of your life and not be the pleasure of your life. The imperfect tzaddik loves God so completely that there is no other love. There is no other emotion. But the pleasure that the natural soul has in natural human affairs has not changed. It hasn't become a pleasure in godliness. The perfect tzaddik has transformed not only the love of his natural soul, but even the pleasure of his natural soul. And why is that? Because he loves God not only with a consuming love, not only with a total love, but a love that includes pleasure. Godliness is not the love of his life, it's the pleasure in his life. And because his pleasure in godliness is absolute and complete, the pleasure of his natural soul has been transformed, and it too finds pleasure only in what is godly. So to put it into very practical terms, when a perfect tzaddik eats, he eats with two souls, the godly soul and the natural soul, and they both take pleasure in the godliness of the food. Whereas the imperfect tzaddik eats with one soul. His love for godliness is what makes him eat, because there's godliness in the food. But the pleasure that he experiences is only the pleasure of the godly soul. The animal soul, the human soul's pleasure, is left out, is neutralized and silenced, because it does not enjoy the mitzvah. And the imperfect tzaddik will not allow it to enjoy what isn't a mitzvah. So when it says that the tzaddik eats to satisfy his soul, there's a difference between the imperfect tzaddik and the perfect tzaddik. To the imperfect tzaddik, he eats to satisfy his soul, meaning to the exclusion of the natural soul. And in the perfect tzaddik, he eats to satisfy his soul, means both souls as one. He eats only for the soul. Even the animal soul takes pleasure in the godly. Now, a very important detail in the nature of the perfect tzaddik is that the perfect tzaddik is described in the Zohar as B'nai Aliyah, members of the high station. Besides being a perfect tzaddik, they're also called high. And what does the Zohar mean when he says high? When the tzaddik who loves God with a true, consummate love, and even finds pleasure only in the godly, when he observes a commandment, say when the perfect tzaddik is eating matzah on Passover, or when he's putting on tefillin, or or when she's lighting the Shabbos candle. The love for God obviously motivates the observance or the practice of the mitzvah, the fulfillment of the commandment. The pleasure that he feels for God obviously makes him want to get closer to God by performing the mitzvah. But here the perfect saint is different from the imperfect saint. The perfect saint is able to put aside the love he feels for God, the passion, the pleasure that he feels for godliness, and he fulfills the mitzvah because it serves God's purpose and not because it satisfies the soul, the love, the pleasure, the yearning, the thirsting of his soul for what is godly. So when it comes to doing the mitzvah, the perfect tzaddik transcends even his godly instincts, even his godly desires, his godly love, his godly pleasure. He puts it all aside. The mitzvah is for God himself. And this is what the Zohar says, that a chassid is someone who is kind to his creator. How can you be kind to your creator? What kindness does God need of us? So the Zohar says, there is God that is invested in creation, and there is God that stays beyond creation. When we do a mitzvah, we bring together, we join HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God on high, with the Shekhinah, God in creation. The female and the male aspects of godliness. And when we do that, then God is one and his name is one. So God wants to be connected with the part of himself that is in the world, making the world a divine dwelling place. And when we do the mitzvah, that's accomplished. The imperfect tzaddik does the mitzvah out of love for the godliness that he's going to experience. The perfect tzaddik does the mitzvah for the effect that this will have on God, putting his own godliness aside. And what's really interesting is that every person, even the non-saintly, is capable of putting himself aside and serving God for God's sake. So every person can be a little bit of a perfect tzaddik, even though he can't be an imperfect tzaddik, as we will discuss in our next program.